I had to touch it in order to pass through it.
That's how they get you, the voice replied. When they say not to touch anything, they mean it.
But the sign said this part of the shop was for wizards only.
Well, that's true. It's an oubliette for wizards. Anybody you have out there has already forgotten about you.
That's foolishness. Who are you? What kind of a joke is this? The voice snorted a laugh and murmured a spell.
Yuchta.
Toby had to squint at the sudden brightness. After a few moments, he was able to tolerate the light enough to see that beside him sat an aged, spindly man in long blue robes. The wizard, for he had to be a wizard, as he was holding a ball of pure light in one hand, had a most magnificent beard, down to his navel, and long hair the color of spider webs, and he looked exactly like a doll, no, an action figure Toby had adored as a child.
It can't be. Are you Merlin?
The old man rolled his eyes.
Oh, yes, well, very fine. They've forgotten me out there, but I suppose people in here can remember me all day. Yes, I am he. And this is Glandalf.
He pointed at a gray-robed skeleton manacled to the floor on his other side. Toby's heart just about fell out of his butt.
Then we're trapped here.
Together? Forever? He asked. Merlin kicked Glandalf's skeleton.
Something like that.
Well then, considering we have nothing but time here,
perhaps you could teach me that light spell.
Merlin looked bored beyond belief.
Sure. Trade you for a spell that magically releases goblin manacles.
Toby said. My main skills involve making it rain bread. Overcome with anxiety, he waggled his fingers at the air just above Merlin's tall blue hat. Raisin buns hailed down, pelting the old man and making him grunt.
I hate raisins, Merlin said.
For several moments they just sat there, Toby staring at Merlin, his hero, as Merlin picked apart a piece of his raisin bread and sulkily threw the raisins at Glandalf's corpse.
Toby?
Did you call me Merlin? It was not I.
Toby! Dark Lord! Here, Dark Lord!
He likes to be called Crepuscular.
I don't care what you call him, I just want him found before I have to speak to your manager.
I am a manager.
Find him or you'll be a manager-colored stain. I'm here!
Toby screamed.
By the skeleton! Behind the curtain that says wizards only, but don't touch it or you'll get stuck here and die!
Very optimistic of you,
Merlin noted.
Ah, there you are.
A powerful hand bit into Toby's shoulder, lifted him off the ground, and swung him through space. The next thing he knew, he was standing in the middle of Nardstromps, staring at a display of harpy braziers. A large, buff goblin stood before him, wearing nothing but a small pin reading store manager.
My Lady Grinda, on behalf of Nardstromps, I thank you for your continued business. But I am forced to request that you keep a better eye on your charges. Perhaps next time you'd like to borrow one of our complimentary strollers.
Of course. It won't happen again. Grinda gave Toby what could only be termed a stare of doom.
Will it, Dark Lord Toby?
Toby looked down at his feet, now free of manacles.
I shall try to restrain myself, he said through gritted teeth.
The manager backed away, bowing, and disappeared into the rows of goblin-sized tap pants.
While you were amusing yourself, we were able to purchase all that is necessary for our trip to Songlin.
Grinda said, sounding annoyingly magnanimous.
Waterproof rucksacks, food, silken tents, lotions and potions, the works. Now we just need to visit ye old map shop to plot our course.
Grand.
Grinda stepped close and put a finger under Toby's chin.
Loosen up, wizard.
Adventure expands the mind and
traps me in a dungeon with some old crazy stranger and a bunch of bones.
How are you able to remember me anyway?
Oubliettes make you forget people.
Grinda's face collapsed like a flying buttress made of putty.
It wasn't her. It was me,
Gustav said.
I remembered you. Not these guys. They were all, who's Toby? What, Dark Lord? With what's that excuse for a beard? What kind of ding-dong would use magic to make rye bread? That's all I heard. Until we were right next to that freaky curtain, and I was like, you guys are under some kind of crazy goblin magic. Grinda wanted to leave, but I found the manager.
You mean you pooped on a carefully crafted pyramid of brandy snifters?
Fia said.
Yes, that's how I summoned the manager.
Grinda cleared her throat and pasted on her smile.
Everything worked out for the best then, yes?
Let us continue. But Toby stopped where he was. A strange feeling slunk into his heart, and he felt as if he were 1,000,000,000 miles away from home and comfort, and as if all his goals were immeasurably far away. He'd wanted to leave his tower, sure, but only because he'd been so sure that he'd be the ruler of any realm he entered. Smart, moneyed, a little bit magic, and hungry for more, the Dark Lord had nowhere to go but up. Or so he thought. As it turned out, the real world was a terrifying and ridiculous place where people with little sense made foolish rules that could ruin one's life with a flick of a curtain.
I want to go home, he said very quietly. Don't say that.
Fia bumped him with her elbow, nearly knocking him to the floor.
I felt that way right after I left my village. When I lost my armor and got bitten by a zebra and dropped all my food in the mud. But I kept going. Sometimes that's what you have to do. Just keep going until everything makes sense.
Her gaze flicked to Argabella, and she smiled a secret smile.
Keep moving, and good things will start to happen again.
But I was chained next to a pile of human bones.
Did you not hear me? I got bitten by a zebra. Now come on.
Grinda had reached the gate out of Nardstrom's, followed by a fleet of goblins pulling and pushing bits of luggage and picnic baskets and the small sled of tent parts pulled by a grimy Pegasus, which was more like a Shetland pony mixed with an angry goose. The metal cage was raised, and the guards saluted, and the winged pony snapped at everyone on her way out, and then they were finally alone, in the middle of the market with their wares. The moment he stepped out of Nardstrom's, Toby immediately forgot why he'd been so angry and sad and terrified.
This beard is doing me some favors, he said, stroking the extensions sprouting from his chin. Everything's coming up, Toby.
Take your bags and don't let go, darlings, Grinda warned. There are always catapurses about. Poltro pulled out her knife and jumped around a bit to discourage any other thieves in the area, and Gustav sighed and wiggled into the harness of the travois that pulled the tent poles along. Fia shoved an indigo velvet rucksack into Toby's arms, and he accepted it, staring down at the gift.
"Do I smell cheese?"
he asked hopefully as he flipped back the flap. Fia gave him a rare smile.
"From Hornswoggle himself. The Oil Witch is easily talked into deluxe baskets that come with free goblets."
Moved by this kindness, Toby struggled to pay it forward by caring about someone else.
"Is Argabella okay?"
he asked. At that, Fia's smile grew wider.
"She will be. She's been asking Grinda constantly to reveal that big secret, but the Sand Witch is slippery. She'll have a hard time avoiding the question on the road."
"The Sand Witch is certainly no hero," Toby mused, and arched an eyebrow by way of challenge.
"But neither is she a subhuman,"
Fia replied.
"Ah, excellent," Toby said, and stroked his fake beard, pleased to have punned at Grinda's expense.
"She ain't fun on a bun,"
Gustav muttered.
When they both turned to gape at the interrupting goat, he shrugged his narrow shoulders.
What? I like to be part of whispery conversations, too. We're here, by the way.
The party had stopped in front of one of the numerous kiosks, generally blocking and disturbing the Goblin Market's customers. But this one wasn't sprouting a dozen goblins with clipboards and curling irons, no. It held merely one aged goblin, his face a topography of lines and bumps and strange archipelagos of skin tags. Before this ancient creature sat a globe that finally satisfied Toby's yearning to see real magic. The sphere was forged of seamlessly pieced together crystals and stones, with oceans ranging from light blue to an indigo so dark that Toby imagined he could see giant monsters smoothly undulating under the surface and fluffy otters cavorting atop it. The part of the globe facing him showed the western earldoms of Pell, from the verdant pastures of Boryx to the mighty swell of Morningwood to the southern shores of Tebring. The coxcomb of the Korpas Range towered above all, and there might have been some tiny griffins circling it. Toby longed to set the globe twirling and see what might lay across the entire sphere. But the goblin looked grouchy and implacable, his gnarled fingers protectively splayed across the glittering stone.
Ah, Grinda, come to yet again attempt to steal my map.
The witch clutched her hand over her heart.
Of course not. You're so silly. I would never.
You. Always.
We merely seek news of the way to Songlin. Best route for the current weather and giant feeding grounds, if you please.
The goblin grunted and held out his lined palm, and Grinda dropped in several jewels that instantly made Toby drool, as he could see the magic throbbing in their depths. The goblin merely opened his cratered maw and tossed the stones in, swallowing audibly. He said, running wizened fingers over the globe.
No use taking the southern route to Songlin at Nokni. The giant laborers are striking, calling all travelers union-busting scabs, twisting them into meat pretzels and eating them with a rather regrettable ketchup made in the several Macs. You'll want to circle around far to the east and take the ferry at Pikestaff, or risk traveling under the mountains through the catacombs of yore if you're feeling brave and didn't have a particularly horrid childhood.
Oh, not again, Grinda said, crossing her arms and pouting. Every time we let them out of Iglik, the giants cause trouble. Why must they continue with this nonsense?
Because they deserve to get paid like everybody else, Fia growled.
Grinda skewered her with a stare.
I do appreciate their right to fair compensation for their labor. You will never understand how much I support that principle, but they are not demanding to be paid like everyone else. They are demanding they get paid in human bones, which they grind into bread.
Mighty Fia blanched.
Ah, catacombs it is then.
Grinda looked her up and down, which took longer than usual.
You had a good childhood?
I meant to say that going east sounds great.
East it is then. Let's be on our way, shall we?
Pleasure doing business with you,
the old goblin said.
Unless anyone would care to trade their first memory or second-born son for a magical gift.
Toby started to raise his hand, and Grinda shoved it back down.
He'll just give you an enchanted hair shirt or a sloth that slowly belches the alphabet, she warned.
Never trust a goblin.
But you're trusting him. You just let him plan our entire route.
She looked down her long, slightly melty nose at him.
Yes, but I know what I'm doing.
Or would you like to go back to Wizard Jail and play with your little friends?
Toby's shoulders slumped, but he wasn't sure why. He didn't know what Wizard Jail was, but he liked the idea of having friends.
catacombs it is, he said. The witch smiled, a pedantic smile. Well, actually, we decided to go east. Toby decided he never wanted to go to the Goblin Market again. 13. Near the bushy cleft of mortal peril. They stood on a very impressive promontory, laden with junk and more than ready to get on with it, in Gustav's opinion. Grinda had opened yet another door into nothing, and now here they were in the great outdoors, which the goat found deeply comforting. The Goblin Market had been a bit of a disappointment to Gustav, but then again, what did a goat really want in life? Boots, and the company of many other herbivores who looked to be fatter, slower, and more delicious than he did, mostly. As he'd passed the shop windows, Gustav had seen room after room of succulent trash, subdivided into specialties, belts, harnesses, aprons, and of course, shoes. After a while he got bored and watched his friends' reactions, which made him curious. As they set off marching after Grinda, who now wore a very expensive pair of delectable hiking boots and a puffy sort of vest, Gustav asked,
"Hey, so what did you guys see in the Goblin Market that looked good?"
Poltro sighed.
"Cool, what didn't look good? The sneaky black cape store, the shop full of boots with silence charms on them, the boutique absolutely dripping with chicken guillotines. I would have gone into that one for sure, if not for..."
She kind of trailed off, sounding sad.
"Got your purse cut, did you?"
"Them goblin thieves must have the market cornered on silent boots and sneaky capes. Didn't even feel the weight of it gone. So now it's chickens, crabs, and goblins. That being the list of things I don't like. And can you imagine if they combined it all?"
"A goblin riding a crab riding a chicken. Boggles the mind, that does. In bad taste it is."
Fia caught up with Poltro, looking concerned.
"What? I didn't see any of that. I simply saw endless armorers, chainmail craftsmen, sword masters, martial artists, and shops that sold badly made throwing stars, and lots of camouflage."
"What?" Toby said. "I saw lots of magic stuff. Nothing weird, just magic stuff. It seemed to change when I confronted it directly, though."
"What about you, Agabella?"
Fia asked. The rabbit girl kept stomping along, her eyes pinned to Grinda's well-clothed back.
"There was one music shop filled with lutes that filled in the missing words and songs, but most of them were just... forget it."
"No. What?"
It took a few moments of marching, falling in behind Grinda's lead, for Argabella to say,
"I kept seeing abacuses and ledgers and mirrors that showed me what I looked like before I was a beast, when I was just a normal girl. I'm not saying I was much to look at then, but I don't know. I kept feeling like if I just went in the right shop and promised my best memory to the right smirking goblin, I could be me again and possibly earn an associate's degree in accounting."
"But this is you," Fia said gently, "for now, and there's nothing wrong with you. Your heart is the same either way."
Argabella shook her head so hard that her ears flapped.
"No, I don't think that's right. I was different then. I'm not sure what changed, but I feel like I lost something. I want to be all me."
Fia stood in front of her, stopping her, and Gustav lingered to watch the show, if only he had some old laces to munch.
"Then let's get answers," Fia said. "Come on, I'm sick of this."
Looping her arm through Argabella's, Fia stomped ahead as fast as her boat feet could carry her and planted herself in the path in front of Grinda. Gustav capered behind them, considering this the most interesting escapade currently on offer. At best, he'd find out how the rabbit girl had become half-rabbit. At worst, he'd see Fia turned into something half-animal and maybe it would be an okapi, or a narwhal, or something really interesting.
"Listen, lady, you owe this girl some answers, so get talking."
Grinda drew back, one eyebrow up, the usual display of chronic resting witch face. Her fingers waggled like she was considering reaching into her puffy vest for her wand, but wasn't yet ready to go to such trouble.
"I don't owe her anything."
"Well, but you do,"
Argabella said,
spreading her rabbit feet in a powerful sort of stance.
You said you'd tell me today, and it's today, so get on with it!
Time is relative, Grinda said, fluttering a hand in the air, and the time is not yet ripe.
Oh, it's ripe,
Fia said, standing slightly to Argabella's other side.
It's practically brown and spotty. Fruit flies are interested.
They were all now in a rough circle around the sandwich, although Gustav had his doubts that Toby and Poltro had really meant to lend their personal placement to such an aggressive arrangement. Just a little farther on, the path led under a stand of tall trees, not quite as impressive and lofty as morning wood, but still thick and sturdy in their own right. Gustav vaguely recognized them as pines, notable for their needliness and sappiness and the sharp scent they lent the air. Not to mention the fact that they were utterly inedible. The path Grinda was following disappeared into this pine forest, lined by blocky orange mushrooms and inhabited by birds that pooped normal poop instead of glitter, if Gustav was any judge of that sort of thing, which he was. He was also getting to be a good judge of character, and the bunny girl had it. She deserved answers. For his part, at that point, he planted his four hooves and lowered his horns. It's not often one gets the chance to ram a sandwich right in the buns. But Grinda, being the sort of person who wasn't easily cowed, put her chin up and kept walking. One foot in front of the other, she strode forward. Soon Fia and Argabella were in real danger of collision, and they both began stepping backward, neither giving way or backing down.
"Why did you do this to me?"
Argabella asked, half begging.
"What did I ever do to you?"
"Nothing," Grinda said, wiping a hand through the air as if erasing blame. "You were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. You were the catalyst of someone else's destiny. Trust me on this, darling. Never give a rose to a pretty princess."
"She was a lady."
"Whatever." Gustav was watching Argabella as that line was delivered, Grinda's tone dripping with dismissiveness. The rabbit girl fluffed up, as if struck by lightning, and screamed, well, like a rabbit, and a terrible sort of noise it was. Grinda reared back in confusion before shoving Argabella aside with one hand and barging past her along the trail, calling back, "Be as dramatic as you like, it won't change the cost of caviar." But that was the wrong thing to say, and Gustav knew it immediately, even if the spoiled witch did not. Argabella howled in anger this time and launched herself after Grinda, who took up running as soon as she heard fluffy feet pounding the trail behind her. They were all running now, even Toby, who was panting and holding his potbelly with one hand. For a woman past her prime, Grinda could sprint like a kid after an ice cream wagon, and if Argabella hadn't been half rabbit and Fia hadn't been in spectacular shape, the witch might have escaped. Instead, the rabbit girl tackled the witch to the ground, and they skidded painfully in the dirt with Fia right behind them. Gustav pulled up short, followed by Toby and Poltro, who was actually quite swift when not encumbered by chickens or waylaid by stealthy pebbles. Argabella straddled the sandwich, one furry hand in the older woman's coiffure, grinding Grinda's face into the dirt.
"You like that sandwich? That tastes good?"
Argabella growled.
"She's going for one,"
Gustav hinted as he noted the witch sliding a hand inside her vest.
"Which is what I would call a bad thing."
"Can't have that," Toby said, edging in from the side.
"Just hold her wrists."
Fia dutifully grabbed the witch's wrists, wrenching them behind her back.
"You're going to regret this,"
Grinda growled.
"Yeah, well, I regret a lot of things,"
Argabella said.
"For one, being half rabbit."
"Ah, there we go."
Toby slid the crystal wand from the witch's vest.
"I'll just keep this safe for you, shall I? Yes, good."
He stood, cradling the wand as if he'd finally found his sweetheart. Waving it experimentally, he said,
"Brigen, Skochal!"
He must have said something vaguely incorrectly, as the thing that appeared on the ground wasn't quite a shoe, but it was big and leathery, and close enough for Gustav's needs. The goat immediately set to nibbling, just in case the faulty magic should waver.
"No!"
Argabella said, holding a small, dull dagger to Grinda's throat.
"Tell me why I'm a monster!"
Gustav backed off the shoe.
"Whoa, now,"
he said, edging closer.
Is this really the way you want this to go? Whatever she did to you, you're basically saying you're willing to let her make you into a killer. But that's not who you are. You're a bard. You love roses and lettuce and cheese. You don't need to go killing uppity witches just to hear excuses for why they did selfish things that messed you up. Wouldn't you rather be a great person who's half rabbit and has some unanswered questions than a human being with blood on her hands?
Arcabella's mouth dropped open as the knife fell from her hand.
Oh, Gustav, that's... Gosh, you're right. I don't want...
Arcabella didn't get to finish her sentence as Grinda flung her off and leapt to her feet, shouting,
Aha! You fool! You will never know true power until...
Grinda didn't get to finish her sentence either, which Gustav considered fair. She'd started backing up, and she tripped over something and fell on her kettle with a witchy shriek. In one fell swoop, Gustav found himself yanked into the air, upside down, and with his face shoved into Toby's butt. His trotters kept connecting with something soft that was apparently Argabella's stomach. They were caught in a net. The entire party had been swept up in it and now dangled, all tangled together, from a giant bag woven of vines that perfectly matched the forest floor. Even Grinda hadn't escaped the indignity of capture, and had one leg flopping out of the net, her expensive hiking boot having fallen to the ground, revealing orthopedic socks and an ankle with so many varicose veins that it could have been its own map.
"Some rogue you are!"
Gustav grunted at Poltro, who was poking him from underneath.
How could you miss a trap like that? Isn't it kind of your entire job to check for that sort of thing?
I don't think I'm a very good rogue, Poltro said. Cut only gave me my sneaking certificate because Lord Toby paid him extra. I'm stuck, and my armor really is uncomfortable, and Argabella smells like really good,
Fia said, followed by a more confused,
Wait, what?
I don't really mind this, as I still have the wand, and Poltro has a stunningly cushy posterior, Toby said before stopping suddenly.
Keep touching it like that, my lord, and I'm going to blackmail you when I get home, as I don't think my brother will approve of your handsiness,
Poltro said.
Cool! Maybe I'll finally be rich. Then I won't need to be a rogue at all.
I think this net is somehow ensorcelled to reveal hidden truths,
Argabella said,
which is fine by me, as I was already saying exactly what I wanted to say, which is that you owe me answers, Grinda, and now that we're stuck together, you're going to start talking by Borix.
I don't have to tell you anything. Except I actually do, Grinda said, all snappy. She tried to close her lips, Gustav noticed, but they wouldn't stay shut.
Thing is, I needed someone to guard the castle, keep out any troublemakers who might wake up the sleeping lady. The curse was supposed to attract someone who would fall deeply in love with Lady Hark of Rita and give her a rose despite Staff's edict. It was supposed to be a rather strapping lordling. I had a nice one picked out from Wretched, more brawn than brains, really, and I'd sent him on his way to court, but you got there first, and I suppose you gave her the rose, which meant that instead of a lordling turning into an overprotective, angry half-lion, beast, I got a lovesick bard who became half-rabbit, so there, like I said, just bad luck.
As they were all crushed together, it was impossible not to feel Argabella quivering with unhappiness like a live mouse fallen into a gelatin salad.
Then change me back,
Argabella moaned.
You did this, you can undo it.
It's not that simple, Grinda said quietly, and you know that's not a lie. Curses are complicated, tangled things. I can magic the hair off your face, or turn you into a half-newt instead, but I can't pull the curse out of your blood. You won't be back to normal until I personally destroy the Heart Rose, and even then, the damage is done. You can never go back to being what you were. Circumstance changes people. Nothing is ever the same. If I sent you back to the castle now, you'd never be happy with what you had before because you've seen too much of the world beyond. Beast or no, better or worse, you are changed.
I like you as you are, Fia said, and I don't think you need to change.
That makes me really happy, and I don't mind being tangled up here as long as I'm tangled up with you.
Argabella cleared her throat.
All of you. I like all of you. I've been pretty lonely for the last 5 years, and it's nice to have friends again.
I've never had friends before in my life, and I don't think I'm very good at it, Toby added.
You're not, my lord, said Paltrow.
A profound silence descended, and Fia broke it by casually mentioning that lots of people she knew died in freak accidents, and so they were all probably going to die too, and she hoped they'd all been sensible about their mortality and made some end-of-life decisions. Gustav found his mouth opening of its own volition.
I would eat almost every one of you, given the chance, he said. Over 50% of you are really annoying, and I don't even think you see me as a person.
Another profound silence began, but was interrupted by Paltrow.
Couldn't agree more. You're just meat on feet. Goat curry is pretty easy to make, provided you can cook the meat over a low flame for a long time, preferably in a large pot with some sort of acid and some sort of fat, and quite a bit of spices to get rid of that unpleasant goaty flavor.
Let's be quiet now, Gustav whispered. If you're really quiet, you'll be able to hear me peeing on your backpack, Paltrow. Also, I have some friends who are chickens, and they really are plotting against you. You're basically a national joke to them.
Enough!
Argabella's yell was so loud that all the birds in the forest went quiet.
This has been terribly useful from a standpoint of personal growth, but I'm kind of ready to get down now. Can anyone with a knife pull it out and hack at the net without hurting anyone else?
The net shifted and creaked where it touched Fia's huge shoulders.
I would only stab Toby a little, and I think he can take it.
I can't, I'm an excessive bleeder, Toby yelped.
Gustav, can you gnaw it? Fia asked.
The only thing I can currently gnaw is, I think, Lord Toby's sweaty haunches. Let me see.
Ouch!
Yeah, I'm facing the wrong direction. Sorry.
Well then, here we go. What's the point in having rabbit teeth if you can't use them, am I right?
You might be good at opening bottles, Paltrow said, or say, gnawing carrots into interesting sorts of shapes. Oh! Or sharpening pencils.
He couldn't see anything but Gustav could hear Argabella gnawing on the thick vines that formed the net. And it was a good thing, too, as he could smell something heading toward them, something with a trollish odor, something that was probably hungry. It was far off still, but prey animals with a fondness for stink could smell such things, and Gustav, for one, didn't like it.
Faster would be better, he whispered, and quieter would be better than louder, seeing as how loud would attract the wrong sort of attention.
And someone could get us down,
Paltrow said altogether too loudly for Gustav's taste. Just like a predator who had forgotten how to predate, being all loud and stupid.
That someone will get us down, prod us a bit with spears, and put us in a stew pot, he whispered. So shut up.
You'll be good in a stew pot, Paltrow noted. Bit of spear prodding will help with the tenderizing, and goat can be a bit chewy, especially if it's overcooked. Nobody likes that.
Nobody likes you,
the goat grumbled.
Almost got it,
Argabella said, and then she must have gotten an important bit chewed through as the whole net lurched sideways, and Paltrow, who was under Gustav and rather damp now, started to fall out.
Keep chewing! Gustav ordered. If Paltrow falls first, then we all fall on her, no loss.
The sound of gnawing doubled down, and soon the vine snapped again. The solid body beneath him disappeared, and Gustav barely had the time to mutter, "Hope I don't land horns down," before he too was experiencing the unique and unpleasant sensation of tumbling through space. He did indeed land on Paltrow, but feet down, which probably wasn't better from her point of view. Paltrow grunted and shouldered the goat off her before standing up.
Think I took a hoof in the giblets, or possibly the kidney. Ugh, whatever it was, I do believe it's time to go pee behind a tree. And if there's blood, I'm going to be very upset and also a little concerned.
Don't worry, Gustav said, standing on shaky knees. That's just tenderizer.
Another creak overhead was his only warning before the rest of the party tumbled down like very awkward hail. The goat darted off the trail right before they landed in an ungainly heap. Argabella, he was glad to note, landed on top, which was the least of the good turns she deserved. Everyone stood in various ways, all of them dizzy and inspecting themselves for damage. They seemed whole to Gustav, who didn't have a fantastic grasp of human anatomy and considered them awkward, gawky things at best. Poltro already had disappeared into the trees, and it was a good thing, as Gustav felt very much like kicking something.
Well, now that we've all revealed our darkest secrets, we'd best get on the road,
Grinda said, sounding older and sicker of life than she generally tried to pretend she was.
Gustav, get back in your harness.
Oops. It's all broken.
He said as innocently as possible now that nothing and no one could force him to tell the truth about anything that wasn't in his best interest. Sure enough, the travois of tent poles had gotten bashed about in the fall from the net, as well as by his stamping around on it and gnawing through some of the less noticeable bits. Because it was bad enough being a beast of distinct edibleness without also being a beast of burden.
I can fix that easily,
Grinda said, doing her best to look elegant in her hiking gear, which was all must from falling out of a tree.
Toby, the wand?
Toby said, holding out a handful of crystalline shards.
I fell on it.
Drattenblast!
Grinda shouted, stomping a foot. This is the most incompetent band of fools I've ever traveled with, and that includes the Fellowship of the String.
You saw the famous elven ring?
Toby asked, his heart dark with jealousy.
No, the string. It wasn't very remarkable, and I was more of a groupie than an actual member of the Fellowship, but be that as it may, we must get on the road and out of this cursed wood.
It's cursed? Argabella asked,
looking up at the silvery towering pines.
Considering the net, I think that's obvious. Can we move now?
Gustav poked at the tent poles with his nose in a way that suggested he was incapable of feeling regret, and she sighed.
Fine. We'll sleep on the ground, like, I don't know, who sleeps on the ground? Chipmunks? Lost princesses being chased by their stepmothers? We'll rough it. But I'd really rather not argue with whoever set that net. Deal?
Deal. Everyone said at the same time, for footsteps could now be heard, along with branches breaking in their path. They took off at a fast clip with only their rucksacks, and Gustav felt deliciously unencumbered at first, before he realized he was the only member of the party without his own sack. He had no belongings, which wasn't much of a bother, except that he really did prefer a nice strip of leather to grass, and he also felt a bit left out. Maybe a goat would like a rucksack. A rugged brown thing made of leather and filled with old tin cans full of yet more leather. Was he not the equal of anyone here in valor and brains? Maybe not in meat yield if they were put on the scale, but he was definitely the one most in danger of becoming dinner. For the first time in his life, Gustav felt like he might not be as much of a person as those around him, and it brought him much consternation. Just in case things went south, he stayed close to Fia, as their earliest discussion had hinged on her sympathy toward the plight of creatures who tasted good with sauce. As Fia had begun of late to travel rather close to Argabella, Gustav was able to watch the women as they stole glances at each other and smiled secret smiles. They were a cute couple, he thought, even if it was taking them quite a while to figure that out themselves. They stayed right behind Grinda, as if expecting her to suddenly betray them, which, Gustav thought, was the kind of thing that was likely to happen.
"Your teeth saved us back there,"
Fia said softly at one point.
Argabella
said, looking down.
"I guess it's nice to have a use."
"You have lots of uses. Your songs have saved us before. Hey, that's it. You could sing a song about how very swift and silent we are, and how we get out of these woods unscathed."
Argabella considered it, then pulled out her lute. They were walking so fast that she could barely strum at once without falling behind Grinda's fast pace, so she strung it over her back and hummed a few bars.
Well, she's a real tough witch with a long history of turning people into beasts, just like me. But she can lead quite a march when she gets down to it. Left, right, left, there's nothing to it. Hurry to the next spot. Come on, let's hurry to the next spot. Hurry to the next spot. Let's all run away.
It took Gustav a few moments to realize that the forest was flying by far faster than a forest had any right to. His trotters barely touched the path as he wound around aged pines and zipped past slightly confused stags. The pines gave way to maples, and the forest went from greens to yellows, golds, and fire-bright orange. With each repetition of her song, Argabella magically propelled them miles. When she stopped singing, it was like suddenly being mired in sand, and Gustav nearly fell over. The reason they'd stopped was obvious. They'd reached another fork in the road. The road split evenly in two directions around a bushy copse, and Gustav couldn't discern a visible difference in either path. They looked the same, and neither one was hung with a helpful sign emblazoned with, "The cake is this way," or, "So many teeth, nope, nope, nope." The road to the Titan toothpicks had at least been upfront about such things. As far as Gustav recalled, the wizened map goblin had said nothing about annoyingly signless forks.
"We are going to step off the path to powder our noses," Fia said delicately.
With her arm around Argabella, she disappeared among the golden trees. Everyone else continued to stare at the bristly cleft.
"Well, Grinda, you know everything. Which way do we go?"
Toby asked, enjoying himself far too much. Grinda glanced left and right and reached for a wand that no longer existed.
"I don't know, Dark Lord. My wand is sand. Do you perhaps know any navigation spells?"
"Oh no, eeny, meeny, miny, mo,"
Poltro added, stepping into the circle.
"Although you'll have to indicate which side is eeny in this case."
"Did your map goblin not tell you which path to take?"
Toby pressed.
"Or did you skimp on the magical jewels you tumbled into his paunch like they were cheap bars of nougat?"
"You know nothing of goblins, or maps, or nougat, you insignificant hedge wizard!"
Grinda howled.
"How dare you,"
Toby said, drawing his cloak around himself and using his magic to drop a half-dozen day-old bagels on her head.
"Wizards, witches, and various friends,"
Gustav said, daring to step between them.
"This should be fairly easy to solve. We simply need to find the nearest river and follow it into the mountains, because cities tend to be located along rivers by mountains, or along the coasts. My highly refined snoot indicates we'll want to take the path on the left."
"Goats can smell water?" Toby asked.
"Of course. Do you know nothing of goats? Or, for that matter, how water works?"
"I know many things about many animals,"
Toby shouted.
"And also, how dare you?"
Poltro stepped up, her dagger in hand.
"You know, my lord," she said with a grin, "I know a way we can kill two goats with one stone. I mean, one goat with two stones. Basically, you and I each take a stone and we sneak up on the little freak and..."
"You know I can hear you, right?"
Gustav said, backing up, his rump coming increasingly close to the cleft between the paths. Poltro looked at him, and he could see visions of goat curry bubbling in her eyes. Toby glared at him, and in the wizard's eyes, Gustav could see visions of victory dances and ads taken out in the local paper, avowing that the Dark Lord had killed the Chosen One, which Gustav personally didn't believe he was, and didn't particularly want to be. But his current issues were a bit more pressing than whether he'd been formally anointed by a pixie wearing one blue sock.
"Whoa, now,"
he said, backing up until his rump hit a tree, and then angling it so that he was pointed down the path he firmly believed to be the right one, in that it was on his right, and also correct.
"I'm a contributing member of this traveling party."
"What do you contribute?"
Toby said slowly.
"Besides excrement."
"And possible future deliciousness, provided I can find the right spices,"
Poltro added. It was at that moment that Gustav noticed the dagger rising in her hand and the rock held in Toby's.
"I thought we were friends," the goat said.
"Dark lords don't have friends."
"Caw! But that hits me where it hurts,"
Poltro whined.
"It might not be bosoms, my lord, but many's the evening we've dined together and discussed items of general interest, including chickens, animal husbandry, the dangers and delights of no-get bread, and your plans to one day kill a chosen one."
Gustav couldn't help noticing that her current stalking behavior was the first thing he hadn't seen her botch up.
"Grinda,"
Gustav called.
"A little help."
"Honestly, goat, I just brought you along to pull the travoy, and you see how that went." He was affronted to note that she was casually buffing her nails as she said it.
"Pia! Argabella!"
he called.
"Surely you two have something to say about the attempted murder occurring in your vicinity?"
But whatever they were doing, they didn't respond.
"Mine! I'm the chosen one!"
Gustav bleated. The Dark Lord grinned.
"That's kind of the point."
As if on cue, Toby and Poltro lunged for Gustav's throat. 14. In the dank necropolis of honeycomb and dread. Grinda reflected that it had been many years since her patience had been pushed to the brink, but this crew of misfits from Boryx had done the job. Profoundly unprofessional, the lot of them. How they'd ever managed to survive meeting Olfactory was beyond her, and she'd never asked because she'd been so distracted by the news of her nephew's death. Their escape certainly couldn't be thanks to this so-called Dark Lord and his fantastically clumsy rogue. When confronted with the simple task of slaughtering a goat, a talking one and a chosen one, true, but still a mere goat, what did they do? The rogue stumbled on absolutely nothing and fell in the middle of the road, thereby tripping the Dark Lord and leaving the goat stunned for an entire second that he was still alive. But he recovered and took the opportunity afforded him, smartly ramming the hedge wizard in the head, knocking him unconscious, and causing a few surprisingly soft dinner rolls to rain down by reflex. The rogue was trapped under her employer, and the goat backed up, said,
"Nighty night,"
and rammed her in the head, too. Then the cheeky beast looked up at Grinda.
"You want some?"
"No, thanks," Grinda said, flashing him a quick, if fake, smile. "I try to avoid attacking chosen ones. The odds are never in one's favor."
"That's right. Hey, yeah, I didn't even need to be afraid there, did I?"
"Oh, no, you were right to be afraid. These powerful auras are a finicky business. They excel at keeping you alive until you turn everything upside down. But they're notoriously bad at making sure you get to that point unharmed. They tend to lead your quest into ridiculously dangerous situations, like this turning fork, where your party inexplicably turns on you."
"Say what now?"
Grinda motioned to the unconscious hedge wizard and his rogue snoring peacefully in the path.
"When people act so strangely that you start to hate them, it's worth looking to see what might be controlling them. In this case, it's an enchanted path that craves blood. See how red the dirt is?"
"Gross."
"All part of your aura. It led you here. And once you fulfill the aura's intended purpose, it dissipates entirely, leaving you quite vulnerable. Most chosen ones die within a month of becoming king or waking the princess or whatever, so you have that to look forward to."
Her grin this time was much more genuine. The goat cocked his head and glared at her with one yellow-slitted eye.
"You keep smiling, but it's at all the wrong things."
"We have different senses of humor, I expect."
"We sure do. Look, I was grateful that you summoned some delicious chuckaboots before..." "The doeskin was fantastic. But that's done, and I kind of think you just did it to put me in your debt. Well, I'm not in your debt, and I'm gonna be keeping a close watch on you."
"Watch away, Billy Goat.
Just help us get to Songlin so we can deal with Staff, the Pixie and Lurker, and then we can all lead blissful lives unencumbered by each other or troublesome enchantments or the machinations of power-mad men."
"Oh, but the machinations of power-mad women are okay?"
That accusation caused Grinda to abrade a cuticle rather painfully. The goat's gall was simply goading her giddy, but she kept her tone civil as she replied, "I don't seek power. You'll note that I live very far away from the seat of local government. What I generally pursue is independence, the freedom to spend my time in peace and quiet on my beach with my crabs, reading grimoires and romances, and the occasional recipe for tarts. But now I seek revenge for Worstly." She failed to mention that she also sought to end Lurker's foul maneuvering against her by killing him once and for all. And she'd like the poor folk of the kingdom to be treated better, as she'd been poor growing up and had benefited greatly from a hand up. Now she employed hundreds of people and paid them well. Helping folks when they needed it was a good policy, and it would be one she pursued if she could. No point in mentioning any of that to a goat.
"Well, I suppose we can agree on revenge for Worstly. He was a good poo boy, I must admit. Except near the end there when he said he was going to eat me. And all the times when he came to take my barnyard friends away and I never saw them again. You know, like my parents."
A rustling of the shrubbery announced the return of Fia and Argabella, both of them smiling and slightly out of breath.
"Sorry!"
Argabella practically sang.
"Couldn't be helped! So, what did we miss? Oh, what happened?"
"They tried to kill me because Fia left me all alone with them,"
Gustav said, bobbing his head at the two unconscious forms.
"What? But you had Grinda..."
Fia began, but the goat interrupted her.
"Who was no help at all? We had a deal and you shirked."
The mighty Fia crossed her arms.
"I don't think we ever had a formal deal. I said you could travel with me, not that I would protect you. And you said you'd be some kind of super spy, but I haven't heard a word of intelligence so far."
"Fine! Grinda likes tarts!"
Gustav yelled, rolling his eyes. Argabella gasped in delight and clapped her hands.
"Oh, do you? I love tarts, too."
"Never mind dessert," the goat said. "Let's get back to the main course here. Poltro wants to turn me into curry."
The rogue grunted and moaned underneath her employer's weight.
"Curry? Yes, please."
"See?"
"I already told you," Grinda said in that sing-song voice people use to feel superior, "that it's not her fault. Enchantments..."
"There is literally nothing enchanting about me becoming curry."
Fia sighed and scratched the goat between his bony shoulders.
"Gustav, I'm sorry," she said soothingly. "I'll try to keep an eye on them from now on, as long as it seems they're serious about doing you harm, okay?"
She stomped over to the pair and lifted both up by the material bunched up at the backs of their necks. There was much groaning and wincing and rubbing of the head.
"Oh, I'm going to have a welt,"
Lord Toby said. Grinda felt no sympathy whatsoever and sought to steer the conversation productively. As long as they stood there, the others would continue arguing. But if she brought it up again, they'd just argue about that instead.
"So, now that we're all in one place and conscious, can we decide which way to go and leave the influence of this annoying enchantment? It doesn't impact me, of course, as I'm attuned to the higher spheres, but action is the best course. We agreed we were going to head around to the east, so..."
"I don't remember agreeing to that,"
Poltro interrupted.
"I don't think I was asked."
"I didn't agree either,"
Toby added, though of course he would disagree with anything Grinda said at that point, the jealous little weasel.
"And while I don't ever really want to be on their side again,"
Gustav said,
"add me to that list. Aren't the giants eating people in that direction? No thanks. Had enough of that already. I don't think we can count on them all to sneeze on us and then let us go because they're embarrassed and grossed out. I'd rather take my chances on the danger I don't know."
"Wait," Grinda said. "That's why Factory let you go? Because he sneezed on you?"
She threw up her hands, helpless.
"We're doomed! We can't handle anything serious. We need to go east from here."
"We need to get this over with quickly,"
Fia replied. And that means taking the other fork.
You'd rather face the catacombs of yore?
Grinda challenged. She widened her eyes and tried to sound incredulous.
Well,
Argabella said.
What's in there, exactly?
Yore. So much yore.
That doesn't sound that bad.
Oh, sure,
Grinda said, waving her hand in the air.
Everybody likes to make light of days of yore because it's in the past, right? And the past is perfectly safe because it's in the past. But it's not so safe when your childhood fears come to life. That's what's waiting for you in the catacombs of yore.
Moths?
Lord Toby whispered in the voice of a tiny little boy, his eyes unfocused in the distance.
Moths diving and swooping for the lights in my eyes, intent on sucking out my soul.
Fia broke the long, uncomfortable silence that followed.
Wow! Most people just have some kind of shapeless thing under the bed or something hairy in the closet. Extra credit for originality, Lord Toby.
I understand where he's coming from, though,
Arcabella said.
You know those little tiny bugs that live in your pantry and get in your oats and flour? Well, one morning a swarm of them flew at me and got in my ears and up my nose, and ever since I've been terrified of breakfast.
Oh, no!
Poltro said.
Eggs, right? Eggs is horrifying, they is. Sinister future chickens never eat anything that comes from a cloaca.
Okay, I empathize with you all, Fia said. But I'd also like to point out that moths and gnats and eggs will not eat us, and giants will. We are better off going through the catacombs.
No. We'd be better off circling all the way around to the east and taking the ferry across the lake from Pikestaff, like the goblin said. Grinda insisted, grouchily. That way there's no giants, no catacombs, none of it. If only she'd had her wand, she could have broken this enchantment and possibly re-enchanted everyone to agree with her. It had been so long since she'd been cut off from magic, and feeling helpless put her in an uncommonly bad mood. Back home, she had several spare wands stashed about, but she'd assumed that this trip would be far easier, that these fools would be easier to control. Without her magic, she could already feel the various spells wearing off her joints and causing her spine to warp and her skin to sag.
No matter which way we go, there will always be something, Fia said. Better we don't waste any more time. I have some armor to pick up in Songlin, better than these half measures I'm wearing now. Besides, Grogan is on the way to the catacombs. Maybe you can find something there to replace your wand.
I would have to make it, Grinda said, shaking her head. And if she didn't hurry, her body would grow too weak, her eyesight too blurry.
So what do you need?
Grinda deflated. Sand. Soda ash. The use of a forge for a day.
Great! We can get all that in Grogan.
Grinda marveled that she had been outmaneuvered and isolated so completely in the group. Clearly, she was out of practice and needed to pay more attention. Years of lounging on the beach with crabs had dulled her sharp edges. She considered striking out on her own, but dismissed the notion almost immediately. She had no wand and therefore very little in the way of defense, so traveling with them, at least to Grogan, made sense. Soon enough, she'd merely be a wizened old woman shouting about taxes. And the goat's aura, she supposed, might see them all through the catacombs safely. And after that, he'd almost surely lead them to Lurker and staff the pixie. Resigned, she followed as they took the left fork and saw that it did follow the river that formed the border between Burdell and Grunting. With Argabella using her song of speed to quicken their pace, they traveled upriver, far from Olfactory, to the river crossing at Fapsworth. They were able to sleep in comfortable rooms and reach Grogan the next morning, though Argabella said she'd probably need to rest her voice after two straight days of singing. She took a nap while Grinda sweated over a glassmaker's furnace all day, crafting a new wand that was the equal to the first, if not its superior. Toby watched her in a creepy, hungry sort of way that suggested he had a long-time case of scepter envy.
She would have to make sure he never got his hands on this new wand. The damage the hedge wizard might do when in possession of any real magical apparatus was stunning and terrifying. Khalas the size of cities might plummet from the sky should his steak be cooked incorrectly. He was simply one of the most dangerous creatures in the world. A person of small talent and large purse, who was thoroughly certain that he deserved more. Back in her room at the inn, Grinda carefully recast all her spells, joints, bones, skin, hair, eyes, memory. She went from bent to statuesque again, grouchy to lively, with great relief.